the new improved. I've started a bit soon there because I've only just clicked record and there's a bit of a lag in this. Look at this, CPU 58%. Live stream, when I'm broadcasting to live stream, it never dips below 99 and I'm on 58% on CPU and I'm recording.
Oh my goodness.
Jesus. Hello, welcome to the new improved live show. It's the Mac Show. Yes, it's the Mac Show. We're here to talk Mac, but what we are actually doing is trialing and, well, not really trialing because it's a live balls and all test of the brand new streaming system that we've got from UK2, which is sponsored by, officially, 100TB. This is the servers that we actually are going to be running the thing on. We've got a few things to do. I mean, we're still kind of public beta, if you like, with this. But we are broadcasting live using the same servers that you would get from 100TB.com. They start at $139 a month, and they're all exclusive for our US listeners, so you've got something there to lock onto. We'll talk a bit more about those later, but the delay on this feed is 3 seconds to everyone in the world. So everybody is getting this, apart from WinRider, who's getting some tech issues, but then he is WinRider. Everyone is getting this at the same time at 3 second delays from when I say it. So Doc, you're going to turn up your volume here.
Give me 1 second. I close the tab. I'm opening it back up again.
Okay. So Doc's got the stream running. Yeah. And what you're going to hear is the echo from Doc because it's going to come back through.
It's pretty crazy. All right, here we go. Let me crank it. There's the volume. Can you hear it?
Bit more.
All right. Let's make it loud.
So this guy's in Hawaii.
Here we go. Turn up. One.
Okay, let's just start talking and see what happens.
One.
Yep.
Okay, let's just start talking and see what happens.
Naughty.
3 second delay. That is
crazy.
Awesome.
It's super
so
crazy.
Are these servers...
Considering what we're used to looking at, this is crazy.
Are these servers any good?
Oh my God.
3 second delay for audio and video. We had a bit of a sync issue earlier on. That's because we started Skype at the same time on the same machine. And the CPU went through the roof. We are streaming on our brand new service. Thank you so much to UK2 for organising this because, I mean, this is a seminal moment for us. Absolutely seminal moment for us. Absolutely superb. Cannot say thank you enough. We are now shed of all responsibility to anyone who does RTMP serving without us. We are doing all by ourselves. And huge thanks to Paul Wheatley and Paul Shadwell. The two Pauls were sitting together yesterday and today chit-chatting and have got all of this running smooth as silk. They are now both working on the next stage, which is counting viewers and pop-out players and flexibility and stuff like that, but just to straight get it up and running in kind of 12 hours, really, I suppose. Superb job. Absolutely superb. Thanks, guys.
Wow. Couldn't say thanks enough. These guys have a US phone number on their thing.
Oh, they're a US
firm.
They're
a US company.
100TB, a US firm. You're buying US dollars on US servers. And actually, as well, you can spread the load onto the UK servers with UK2. They share the data load if you really need to. They're awesome. If you need co-location, you type stuff.
Nikes, this is off the chain.
We haven't, I mean, it is fresh off the press. I don't think UK2 think that we're doing this yet. I just wanted to make sure that we got it out there as soon as we possibly could. But 100TB are going to be sponsoring the live show from now on with some fantastic servers. We're going to get some offer codes, I'm sure, in time over that kind of stuff. And there's going to be loads more coming on with UK2. They are absolutely...
This is amazing.
Dedicated to
Yo,
us.
I'm bringing back Quake.
So what the difference is, if I talk about a story and I want to talk about the Apple Watch and I click on a picture, so I click on the picture now... You guys are going to see that picture by the time you're ready to talk about it with me.
Oh, God.
So instead of putting a picture up and then having to wait for you guys to catch up,
you need to chat for 90 seconds while the rest of us can see if we can see it.
I'm just filling air while you guys are waiting to catch up to it for 3 minutes on live stream.
Oh,
but
my God.
With UK2 and 100TB servers. Bang, we're talking about the same thing.
Tim smile. Let's just put it that way.
Look at that.
It is about three seconds, says Paul. It is
one. What's really amazing to me, in all honesty, normally things coming into the island have to come in and then they do a little weird kind of pre-caching thing in order to keep the speeds up. And then so If it's 3 seconds for most people, mine would normally still be like 10, 15 seconds. Whatever CDN that they're using is just blowing right past the little coconut wireless thing, we call it, because it does. We have this weird system on island called Lantern that they use in order to try to keep the traffic up, and this is killing it. This is amazeballs.
I mean, there's a couple of comments in the chat room like, can we have a pop-out player? That's coming. Just give us time. It won't work with my iOS device. It will very soon. Hopefully in the next 7 days, we'll have this up and running so that you can watch it on an iOS device just in Safari. And it'll work in Safari without Flash, and we'll get all of that sorted. Shads and Wheaters are on it. Batwinch saying, can we have it a bit bigger? You'll be able to pop it out in the size.
Okay, so I'm a guy that works in a club, right? So all I just heard was, can we have a pop-out player? It means let's go outside and smoke a joint. And then some just chick asked me, can I get it bigger? And I'm like, that's just rude.
That's just a matter of time in my case. And the time's getting longer as I get older. Right, anyway, moving on. Don't spit that out, Doc. he did. 1-0 ranking. joining me to discuss the week in Apple, these two, Matt and Doc. Doc and Kelly are here. There's no Mattcast, unfortunately. Adam's had a bit of a work emergency that's cropped up, so he's had to bail. So there's just the three of us shooting the breeze today. Chris Hadfield's gone live on Periscope. There you go. And
that's worth watching. Yes,
we'll be back next week. Right, so the week in Apple. I spoke to you guys last night, which is why I'm not too worried about doing a how. Who the hell are you? Tim Cook has been voted God of the Year. I forgot what the award is, but it's kind of paralleled with God of the Year. World's greatest leader.
Leader, I think, yeah.
Yeah. The Apple journalists are seeing just how far they can get that nose up Tim's chocolate starfish.
Backside.
Well, I said chocolate. What? Chocolate starfish.
Oh, God. I have to open up my document.
I don't have to. You want a Wikipedia now, chocolate starfish.
No. I have a document of all of the weird stuff that I learned from you and Paul and other Paul and Greeny. And then so
is it too
I
big?
Have it in notational velocity. I open it up and I have this like, you know, ex-British lingo text file. And then I just add things to it. So I have a whole list of stuff I learned from you guys.
Is it too big for cloud storage now then? All the shit we've come out with.
Oh, God.
That's why he was excited about the Amazon storage yesterday, was because he needs the unlimited.
Oh, it's just, no, okay. So back to the story anyway. Tim, it's just all, you know, oh, Tim, we love you. And he's a great guy, I'm sure. And he's a great leader, I'm sure. But it just seems, you know, oh, Apple's really rich, must be because of Tim Cook. Ergo, he's the man of the year.
All right, so I want to give them a spin that they didn't really give in the Fortune piece. And this is why, this is funny, because what I think Fortune is doing, and this is going to be rude of them, and they may not have been the people who dropped the whole story, but, you know, they're going to be probably what's the paper of record as everybody goes on. Who was the provider of the original award? Is it Fortune or is it somebody else? Because I know they made the most noise about it.
I don't know.
I forget.
I'm looking real quick. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, Fortune has a tendency to just jump on whatever they can jump on. Because they will be in a week later, say something rude about the lines at the Apple Store on the 10th. Or about the system and the way that it didn't really work. You know, like, they'll jump all over it, right? So
yep.
That is sort of what they do. However, it seems to me that, let me look at somebody other than Fortune. Thanks for the Engadget link, Rowarta. I hope I said that correct. I think what happens is you get the thing that where he's doing really good with Apple, yes, but on some different levels, he did some really cool stuff last year. And I think one of the biggest things he did was, you know, come out and speak up for the underdogs. And it was all the minorities, you know, not just the people with the alternative lifestyle, but he spoke about everybody. And he was like, look, dudes, you know, it's way beyond time for us to stop being douches about this, right? You know, he's very philanthropic. No, he's not Bill Gates. He's not even close to that. But he's being philanthropic. He's went out and put himself on the line in a very stodgy community and came out and said, look, you know, I am going to admit it because I'm sick of people talking about it and it's getting a little old at this point and it really doesn't matter. I'm still Tim Cook and so I'm gay. What do you guys say about it? Somebody stepped to me, I'll punch you in the lip. That was kind of, it's like, now we got this out. Can you guys shut up? Can we get back to business? Okay, cool. And that was huge. I mean, that made a big deal for a lot of people. And I know some people personally that it touched who were, you know, maybe getting bullied at work and was kind of afraid to come out and have since come out after Tim's come out. So I know someone personally that it has actually changed their life. And so I think that's a big part of it as well. That does take huge amount of cojones, especially in the, you know, douchebaggy world of corporate leaders. And plus he's from the SIP. Like, that's unheard of in the Mississippi. You know, you just don't do that kind of thing. And Tim's like, screw it, I'm coming out. And I think that is also very big of him as well.
Kelly, what's your thoughts?
Well, I looked it up. It is, Fortune does put the list together. I do want to point out that it's called World's Greatest Leaders. Number 4 is Pope Francis, and number 6 is Taylor Swift. So
Okay. Maybe
we should spend a minute thinking about how much stock to put in a list like this. They've got Elon Musk down at 23. So anyway.
Well, okay.
So there's that.
I've got to say, this show is not renowned for its research. So yeah. Your research has just entirely changed my entire perception of that story in that... Actually, against that country, you know, that company, he is a frigging god.
Yes.
He really is.
But they've got, I mean, if you're going to talk about great leaders, they've got Bill and Melinda Gates at 18, honestly.
Yeah. So did you say that Taylor Swift is above Pope Francis?
No, she's number 6, and he's okay. Number 4. But what does she lead?
A band, I guess. But
No. See, that's not fair, right?
Like,
no,
I don't understand. She's so anyway. So.
Go on, anyway. Well, let's
I mean, I get that she's like
later.
I think she's the highest paid woman in music at the moment, which is, you know, good for her. And I'm not trying to say anything about her, but I don't understand what she's leading. And that's the thing that I'm trying to.
Careful,
Kelly. Don't piss off the sisterhood.
No, yeah. I'm not trying to, but
I'm joking.
I don't know what she leads because I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan. Maybe she has a record label or a fashion house or whatever that I'm just not aware of.
Okay.
So, like, I know what Pope Francis leads. I know what Tim Cook leads. I know what Elon Musk leads. I know what Howard Schultz leads and Bill and Melinda Gates lead. I know what they're leading. I don't know what she leads. That's it. I'm not trying to talk smack about her. I'm just confused.
There's no need to backpedal. Taking the piss out of people is what we do well on this show.
Well, I'm not trying to in this case, though. I really don't know. Like, if I want to make fun of her, I'll make fun of her, and okay. You'll know. Okay. But so in this case, I'm not getting it. So
let's let Doc in, and he can defend defending Taylor Swift. I think we have a title already.
I am going to defend Taylor Swift, and I'm like you. I'm not a Taylor Swift fan.
Don't lie. You've got some big fat club mix of Shake It Off on repeat on your phone, and we know it.
Dude, I'm about to get this party started here with this sick beat.
See? Anyway.
All right, so look. Most importantly, the list is quantified as such. These extraordinary men and women are transforming their business. Start there.
Okay.
Then they needed a better word to call the list than leaders. So.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's, it's still Fortune's problem. But it's an interesting list. In having glanced through it and looking at names that I recognize, it's an interesting list. I think Doc is totally right that they're going to talk smack about Tim next week or in a couple when the Apple Watch stuff starts showing up. So.
Kelly, how would you know what Doc is right about? Because you haven't let him finish. Let him finish, woman.
He talked before. No, I gave him an opportunity.
Yeah, dude, you got a millisecond there and you breathed. How dare you breathe in a sentence? Kelly's in like Flint.
I let him talk about Tim Cook and coming out and all of that. He talked about the whole thing. He got many sentences in a row in back there.
That's the last time Doc's talking today.
Well, good, because he got two of my spots yesterday, so fair is fair.
Not that there's a memory.
I thought we cleared the cache.
If you want to know what Kelly's talking about, then listen to the big show.
Nice advert pull back another show.
I think it'd be fair to say we put Kelly in the corner last night.
A little bit.
She's gone red.
Kind of a lot. You should see how many paper stars I was able to fold while y'all were taking my spots. Anyway.
Okay. Can Doc just finish his defense case for Taylor Swift first?
That's fine.
Okay. Right. Doc, he's going to say at the end, over, okay, so that you know it's finished.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't realize you weren't done, so go ahead.
No, because it was really, I'm reading verbatim so that way we can go from a point of knowledge versus feeling. Okay, the thing the list said that is people transforming their business, their government, philanthropy, and so much more, right? And then so, first of all, that list quantifies one thing because they are Fortune magazine, so they are talking about business. What Taylor is doing is definitely true, whether you like her or not. She did something very big of her, and the reason why they gave her the thing is based on her fight against Spotify and other corporate sponsorship who are going out there and, you know, basically trying to secure monies and deals and stuff off the backs of artists. And she's like, no, artists need to be compensated a certain way. We went through years under the slavery of record labels. And now many of the artists are owning their own labels. They're doing their own things. And they're taking these deals directly from the streaming services and stuff like that. She felt that they weren't properly compensating her based off the volume of people that use that service. And so she was one of the first guys to stand up against them and pull themselves out. The other thing that she's done is in a world of Kanye's and Miley Cyrus and little Weezy's who basically go out and do all kind of weird stuff and act like douchebags and say, over here, look at me. Hey, look at me. Hey, look at me. She has managed to do all the things that she's done without dumbing down the way that she behaves in order to maintain her efficacy in trying to speak out, you know, and just sort of grow up as a normal person and still put together her music. So that was her big deal. And for that, if you use that as a basis, I will give her a huge ladder to stand on, because as a musician and, you know, paying attention to entertainment news a lot, most of the people in her camp are freaking Riri's, and she's not acting like that. Most cases.
Right. So you made that case already. And I said, the problem is that Fortune called it a list of leaders and they need to call it something better, but leader is the only short thing you can really say there. So yeah, she pulled her music from Spotify because she wanted to be better compensated, and clearly it's not hurting her, and she's talented, and there's nothing wrong with any of that. Like, good for her. I don't have any issue with any of that. And good for her. I think what she's doing is awesome, and I think what she's doing is interesting. I just, like I said, I didn't understand what she was leading, and she's not necessarily leading anything unless this turns into a movement where a bunch of other people start trying to eliminate the record distribution piece as the thing that is sort of causing them to go deeply into debt before they ever end up getting a record out the door.
Paul Shadwell's pointed out that Doc hadn't said over.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, you paused again, dude.
I think that the point being missed is she is leading the camp because nobody else did it first. So when you go first and you do something that no one else has ever done, okay, this is the Mac show. My analogy isn't going to work. But yeah, it's when true. You do what no one else has ever done, I mean, you get to be called a leader. That's just case in point, you know. Neil Armstrong will forever be the leader because he was the first dude to walk on the moon.
Well, okay, I mean, let's go back to the story, which was Tim Cook, actually, not Taylor Swift. I was playing devil's advocate a little bit at the start there. I do actually think that he's a good influence on Apple at the moment, because he is quite boring, and I think that's something that Apple needs in this kind of... if you had someone, and I don't particularly like him when he comes over on the camera, but, you know, if you had someone like the guy that's the head of Oracle, what's the name?
Larry Ellison.
Yeah, if you had someone like Larry Ellison at the helm at the moment, Apple would really be in deep poop, I think. I don't think it would have gone anywhere near as well. I think Cook brings a measured refinement and a certain boringness that's a positive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think he is probably a very, very good CEO as it stands, and he's done Apple a good service.
He's absolutely
inspirational. That's when the next thing's going to come around. I think he's a good steady hand on the tiller, but whether he's the guy that inspires is the next stage, or whether he's just someone who allows. And I've worked for guys who I've very much been impressed with because mm-hmm. I am the creative force, and they let me be the creative force. And you know, they're there when I need them, rather than trying to tell me what to do. And I get that impression from Cook a little bit. So I think it's a positive.
I think so too, and I think I'm hoping that every time somebody comes out with a list like this, where Apple's at the top of the thing, or Tim Cook is, as the CEO, is being recognized for some sort of achievement, whatever that may be, even if it's just, you know, best glasses, nicest haircut, whatever, like, I don't even care. But every time this happens, I hope that it makes all of the, "This wouldn't happen if Steve were here," idiots, a little bit quieter, just a little bit quieter. Because we keep hearing that, and we're going to hear another round of it. For people who don't know, spoiler alert, you're going to hear from people that the watch is stupid and that the watch is going to fail because Steve isn't running things today. The end. You're going to hear it, and it's going to be ridiculous, but that doesn't stop people from saying it, obviously.
No, I think you will.
So yeah. I'm hoping that enough of these sorts of things happening will eventually finally stomp that down, not necessarily for good, but it'll stop being something that gets as much attention, and it'll start being like that guy downtown that wears the board that says the end is nigh, and like everybody sort of knows he's there, but nobody's actually paying attention. I'm hoping that eventually the Steve believers will be those people.
I think history will look back on Cook, and I think Cook will be judged by the watch, most definitely. And in 5 years' time, if there is no Apple Watch, he will be judged to have failed by that measure. Or if the gold watch is no longer on sale and only the other two brands are on sale, I think he will be deemed to have failed. And I think that's a little unfair, because I think the gold watch is errant. And actually, if you I did some kind of digging around while I was on waiting for a meeting the other day, and I started looking at marketing tactics of Burberry, and there's an awful lot of dirt on the net about how Burberry market themselves and how they push their brand forward and how they get the perception of quality over. And a lot of what I was reading was echoed in the way that the Apple Watch is being put across by the keynotes. And Erin's may not be on stage, but I think she's had a huge influence in this idea of separating off the gold as being the aspirational requirement for people, and why there is no gold-coloured watch associated with it. But I think, ultimately, I think the gold watch will be the undoing. I think the gold watch will disappear in 5 years' time, and there will just be two basic standards. And I think there is a place for a basic one and a better one, but I don't think there's a place for a best one.
You're dead solid about that, and I will stand again and say, in the order of doing business and creating offerings and coming up with pricing strategies, one of the best things you could do in any business is offer good, better, best. And, I mean, that's all the way from, you know, just doing lemonade stand on the corner, you know, you got good, better, best kind of deals. Whenever you offer people stuff like that, it makes it so much easier for people to jump in on the middle. And what's really funny is you do see it in the chats, you do see it in the comments, that even at the 350 or 399 watch, some people are yelling that 300 plus bucks is expensive. But I guarantee you, it's less people saying that, because there is the balance of a $10,000 to $18,000 version. So I say less people are harking on the 350 nugget because it makes it way more palatable.
I think the separation is the key part as well, though. You've got a 50% or you've got 100% increase. So from the 350 to the next watch, you've got a doubling of price. Whereas from that middle watch to the next watch, that's tenfold. That is a 10 times increase in price. And yeah, okay, there are precious metals in that, but they are not that precious. And that's what people are looking at and going. And I think Chuck's point was exactly right. And I keep coming back to it when I talk to people about the watch. And I keep crediting Chuck with it, because he was the first person that said it and made me think it. There is something about this that signifies a little bit of the greed in Apple that's come out that wasn't there before. And this is the first time they've been openly ostentatious about part of the top end of their brand. You know, there was no gold-plated Mac that you could buy that was 10 times more expensive than the other Mac. You know, so I think there is a worrying element within that. I don't know where to place the blame because I don't know the answer, but I perceive from the stuff I read on Burberry the other day that Arents could be a guiding hand in that. And I think Tim Cook's got to be careful because as much as Browett was crap as the retail head, Arents could pull them the other way and still be as bad, potentially. But at the moment, it seems like she's doing a great job because she's not messing with the stores that, you know, the don't fix it, it ain't broke kind of thing that she's doing is good, whereas she would have liked to have perhaps come in and put a stamp on it, and she hasn't done that. So that's very much a positive.
And, you know, I don't know, with the gap in it the way it is, they're going to make a metric crap ton of money. But you know what's really funny is people say that about the watch, but there's other industries where you kind of run into the same thing. Like I don't do them anymore because they're kind of nerve wracking to me. But you know, if you go to a session and you're going to have a photographer come in and say, take pictures of your kid, right? If you're taking pictures of a regular kid, say they're in like high school or whatever, you might be able to get the photographer to do your nice photo layout, set up everything for say around $500 to $750. If you in Hawaii, if you tack on baby's first photo, that dumps it up by double. For no apparent reason other than the fact that the kid is miniature, and in Asian cultures, your first 100 days and your first year are very, very big deals. They're celebrated much differently than other places in the world. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, in ancient China, most kids never made it past a year. So first birthday is a big deal here. A kid's first birthday party in Hawaii averages 10 to 20 grand. All right. This is just a stupid party. Wow. Now, and it's funny because if I were to do this same exact party, say for a 5-year-old, I could probably throw the whole party together for $500. All right. Now, if you take that and you turn it into wedding photos go up to like 10 grand here. It's the same Canon 5D Mark III and the same flashes and the same everything. But the market allows that value to go up more because of the perception of the wedding being a quote unquote special day. That same photographer to run out and say, shoot a political thing, would charge less, and it'd be the same crew, same amount of pictures, same work, same everything. So there are cases where you can take certain things and mark them up based off the emotion and the status that comes along with it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't do that. I mean, people pay me for a day, and they get charged a day rate. And
yeah, I'm with you. I don't do that either because it's too hard to manage. And then you don't want somebody to come back to you later and say, oh, you charged me this for this. Why are you charging me that for that? So I don't do that either, but many people do. And you know the business as well as I do. So, like, it happens in other businesses as well. I mean, for the most part, a Lexus versus a high-end Camry, the only difference in reality is the leather seats and the logo. Everything else is completely interchangeable in the car. There is a $9,000 to $18,000 difference because one says Lexus and one says Toyota.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Same with Volkswagen and Porsche. And Audi and Porsche, yeah, very much so. Rumors say that the 6S will be out in the end of or the second half of 2015. The more speculative people are saying December, but there are other people saying September, which is traditionally kind of the iPhone come iPad event, isn't it? September 1, 5.5 inch, 4.7 inch and 4 inch. So there's not going to be a change in formats. I think that's fairly predictable, isn't it? Do you see anything major coming?
No, I think everything will be the same, except for A9. I mean, that's all we really need. Everything else is kind of
that's going to be the big change. Nothing else. Anything you want to see, guys?
OS 9. I feel that 8 was a test of our loyalty, for lack of a better word.
I don't know if this relates to the car story or whether it relates to the iPhone 6, because when I've said, what do you want in it, guys, Batwin just typed a seat. That may be pushing it a bit far. I think that's still the car story, to be fair.
If the phone gets any bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Get it up to 8 inch, then maybe. And Troisky says, force touch home button. Now, Kelly, I mean, because we were going to talk about the force touch thing, and let's kind of pair the two together here, most definitely. there are people, there are third-party suppliers now of programs who are looking into the Taptic engine and seeing what it is that they can actually get done with it. But you've actually got a computer with the Force Touch on it, haven't you?
I do indeed.
So you are uniquely placed, because neither of us have, to tell us, what's it like?
So here's the thing is that, and I know how this sounds, and I'll try to elaborate, but it's a very small but a very big difference.
Yeah, come on, it's fine.
So you don't, when you look at it, I mean, I can set my computer next to what was my computer a week ago, and it'll be fine. You won't notice the difference, except that the new one I have a, I did not buy the brand new one in the three colors or whatever. I have a 13-inch current iteration as of like a week ago, MacBook Pro. It's a MacBook Pro 13-inch early 2015, has a 2.7 gigahertz Core i5 in it. I went the Retina upgrade this time. Like every time I sort of get a big upgrade, and this time the upgrade that I got was the Retina display, which is amazing. And if you don't have a laptop with Retina display, now that there really isn't as much of a Retina display tax as there was when I bought my last machine 3.5 years ago, it wasn't too long after Retina had come out, and it was like a $500 or $600 difference, and I couldn't talk myself into paying it. So when I look at my screen now compared to the other one, it's a dramatic difference. But the aside from the thinness of this one compared to my old machine, the dramatic change in the trackpad is that it feels the same no matter where you're touching it. Like whether you tap, like we've talked about this before, I have teeny hands. Mm. And so it was always kind of a pain for me to use the trackpad, because I had to shift my hands down at least a row of keys on the keyboard, if not a couple, because I wasn't able to get it to click when I was pressing on the top edge of the key of the trackpad. And now that's not the case. It all feels the same. Everything, you get just as responsive a click from the top of the screen as you do from the bottom. It is absolutely an idea whose time has come, and it's the kind of thing that you don't notice until you've been using one for a while, and then you go somewhere else and you use a different trackpad, and you're like, what's wrong with it? It's clearly it's broken. It's not that it's broken, it just wasn't working the way it needed to, which is this way. And it's one of those things like natural scrolling, which when it first came to the computers, you know, in, I think it was Lion that turned on natural scrolling. It's very much like, oh, like, yeah, I get it. You know, it took a second and now it's awesome. And that's sort of how I feel about this, is I don't have to move my hands at all. And if all I'm using is the top half inch right up next to the keyboard of the trackpad, I get the same amazing responsiveness that I used to get only by using the bottom half inch of the trackpad. The whole thing feels the same no matter where you're trying to click, and it's wonderful.
Windrider's saying in the chat room that he's checked out the 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro against the old 13-inch MacBook Pro, and he says it is an amazing difference. It's a step change. You can watch.
The screen is amazing. The thinness, because I did have my previous MacBook Pro, my previous machine was a MacBook Pro, and so it had the optical drive in the side, which I've taken out, but even just the fundamental thickness of it, it used to sort of strain my wrist a little bit if I picked my computer up with one hand, particularly from the short end, and I was trying to pick up the whole thing. And this one doesn't even, I don't even flinch. Like, I know I don't have, like, amazing wrist strength or anything, but the difference is amazing. The battery life is just stupendous. I really can't say enough nice things about this new computer. And the thing is, none of these changes are dramatic. It's not a different color. It's not some sort of dramatic, it's not like the new one, you know, that's coming, the USB-C that comes in gold and all that. It's not any of those things, but it's all of these upgrades to what I had before, which is by no means a slouch of a machine. I mean, that one is a 2.9 gigahertz i7 because I nudged up the processor in it when I bought that. And so, and it's got the same memory and only a slightly different hard drive, but just having to put the rotational in that other computer made it fundamentally thicker than what this one is. And I really am impressed with the build. And like, the only thing I don't like about it is that I'm used to all the ports being down one side. And on this machine, one USB port is on the other side. And it's weird to me. That's it.
Yeah.
It's like the only complaint I have. And I couldn't be happier. And the nice thing about having that USB port on the other side is that maybe I can actually use both USB ports at the same time for some things, because sometimes if I plug in a flash drive, I can't plug anything else in. So I absolutely recommend this machine. And the big reason I went with this instead of holding out was because I am terrified of having a computer that doesn't have a MagSafe adapter. I don't know what I will do with USB-C. I feel like I actually am afraid of it, because the USB-C thing isn't gonna just pop out and save my computer from hitting the deck. And as many times as that has happened to me, I really am not comfortable going to anything else.
Doc, have you had a go with the Touch?
No, you know, yesterday I had plans to go to the store, and then they got thwarted by a longer than expected appointment. I have been wanting to get a feel on it, because one of my buddies did get a new computer too. And you know, he's not, you know, anywhere near as like nerd savvy as we are. And he was saying that it's really hard to believe how well it is. He goes, the only thing that could have made it better was if they made this thing out of glass. And I was like, dude, it is glass. And he's like, what? Is it glass? Yeah, I go, they've been glass for a while. I said, even mine is glass. And he looks at it and he goes, the silver one is glass too? And I'm like, yeah. And I think what he meant was he wanted to see the motors like twerking underneath. So like, somebody needs to come out with a trackpad mod so you can see the little one.
If it is glass, then make it glass. Yeah, absolutely.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I want one of those.
Big Russ in the chat room says, I've got a 2013 MacBook Pro with Retina 13-inch, and I absolutely love it. Troisky says, it still misses the old matte screens, though. So much reflection on what they're using now. And I think I've got a theory about this. Is you walk in the store, and you look at the glossy screen in the store, and you go, oh, isn't that gorgeous? Because it's sharp, and it's clear, and it's glossy. And then after you've used it for a week, you're like, oh, I wish it was still matte. And it's a sales thing. You just buy it because it looks super gorgeous in the shop. And then when you actually use it, you realize that it's limiting and you wish it wasn't.
See, I don't have that problem at all. I've had glossy screens for a long time, and I haven't really minded it.
I'm all right in here, but if I'm on the train and you've got light sources coming from all directions, that's when it gets really tough. It's hard to watch on a train.
Well, I run into that because I tend to have my brightness ratcheted down like as far as I possibly can. Like, almost to the point where the screen is completely black. I'll have like two little dots in the bar, you know, of brightness. I do that a lot. And so for me, sometimes I get a lot of reflection, and then I remember I can just make it brighter again. And then that takes away most of it. I have a problem once in a while, but it's not like a huge chronic issue. I have an overhead light in this room, and it's never bothered me once on this machine.
Well, I mean, so, in this room, I've got 12 lights running at the moment to keep the luminosity up so that I can actually get the green screen to function correctly.
Right.
Because the green screen's right here. I mean, it's not even 2 feet behind me. So you've got to pour a lot of light onto that to get it to function. It's not a problem for me in here at all, because the lights are all coming from single direction, so I can go against that. And I always wear dark colors in here. I never wear light colors because it screws with the white balance and the green screen. So it's dead easy to control, but when you get out in the wild, it's a bit of a different animal, unfortunately.
Sure.
So, and that's when it really now hits you that you wish it wasn't.
iBookery made a good point, which is something that I've seen other people do, which is people who don't like the shiny on their iDevice screens and put a matte screen protector on it. And you can do that, but it does, like he said, the fuzzy protector really took away the sharpness of the screen. On Mr. Kelly's last phone, he had a matte screen protector. Because he went, oh, this glossy is horrible and I hate it. Can you do something about it? And I said, yeah, I'll go buy you a matte screen protector. So I bought it and I stuck it on there for him. And he went, this is horrible. Can I have a screen protector that isn't fuzzy? I'm like, yeah. So just got the plain sort of shiny one that was just as reflective as what the glass was in the first place. And it was a dramatic difference just in looking at the screen. So It is something that you can change, but in some cases you will end up giving up some of that sharpness, which is kind of a bummer.
Paul Shadwell's just realized and shocks himself that the stream is still running and it's in sync.
Mm-hmm.
Our awesome stream.
Our way to go, Chad.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
You know, speaking of Paul Shadwell, you know what was kind of missing from my my computer bag this month was chocolate.
Chocolate?
From Paul.
I know.
I had a thought the other day. I was like, you know, right now I'd be just coming home. And I'm not just coming home. I am still sitting here.
I think I still have a chocolate bar from Paul because I don't have the heart to eat it all, because then it will be gone. And I'm weird and sentimental like that about some stuff. And Macworld is one of those things.
I did that with Jeff's Spirit Hound Gin. I had this much in the bottom of the bottle. and you just saw this much on the feed straight away.
I can see this much. I know.
I had this much in the bottom of the bottle, and I kept it there for like 2 months. And then in the end, I was like, nah, stuff it. Let's put it down. But chocolate. Yeah, we would have been coming back from Macworld, wouldn't we? Just about now. It would have finished on Saturday.
Yeah, we'd be all sad. Our livers would be going, hell yeah, finally.
Yeah.
If I had one, I'd be pouring it out right now. All I've got's water.
Not after last night. Jesus. I got no, that was tough. That was real tough. Apple Watch, if you're buying the Gold Edition, you can schedule, if you want to buy an Apple Watch, but you don't want to do a pre-order without visiting the store first, then obviously not expecting a massive run on these straight off the bat, then you can go and book an appointment with an Apple Store staff who will give you a guided shopping appointment. If you're buying the $1,000 watch or the $350 watch, then you get 15 minutes with that person to just try it on your wrist and go, oh, that's pretty cool. If you are buying the $18,000 watch or the gold watch, then you get 30 minutes with that person. Based on the fact it's the same watch that does the same thing, I can't think what else you're going to get from that other than sitting there going, oh, Jesus, can I really justify 18 grand on a watch?
Hey, you know, I just thought of something and I just bridged it in my head right now, because yesterday when I heard everybody poo-pooing it, I was kind of like, yeah, what do you expect for the amount of money? But now, going back to the revelation that you brought back about what Mr. Reverend Dr. Chuck Letourneau said, there was a thing going around this week on the various blogosphere about the training that Apple salespeople are getting. And I kind of poo-pooed it at first, because anybody that's ever been in sales, you get the same basic sales training in almost every other high-end retailer anywhere on the planet. As a matter of fact, when I worked at Apple, I got in a big pissing contest with my regional manager, because a year after I had been working at the store and doing really well and getting a lot of flack for being like one of the highest salespeople in the store, even though I was a genius, I sold more crap behind the bar than people walking around. They told me, oh, you have to go to the sales training now. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, you don't understand. This is Notre Dame versus Michigan weekend. Let's do it next weekend. And they're like, no, this weekend. I was like, no, wait a minute. I'm the only nerd that watches football. And this is a thing. This is like church. My religion requires me to watch the biggest game of the year. Like, no, you got to go. So I was really mad. I was like, what are they going to teach me that I don't already know, considering I've been doing this for a year and I'm like winning the warranty sales, and at that time, mobile me.
How much training can you need if you're first?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm top of the chain on mobile me, top of the chain on Apple Care, top of the chain on hardware sales, and I stand stationary behind the bar. And I'm, you know, like, what can I learn? And then so come to find out, though, you know, this was known as the Apple Way, right? And there's these weird acronyms that have to do with aligning yourself with the customers and using the right verbiage so that we basically don't get sued. Really, that's all it's about. And then so there was this thing going on talking about, oh, wow, this color band is going to look really good with that shirt. And, you know, maybe you should look at. So it was basically about upselling. And if you know, the Apple Store experience to date has never been really about pressurized upselling.
No.
And
they don't try and sell you extra RAM or extra storage necessarily. Yeah,
No, they bring it up once. If you say no, that's the end of it. There's never like, well, you know, in order to get the proper stitch witchery out of this such a trick, you're going to need to do that. They don't do that. You know, hey, would you like more RAM? Would you like Apple Care? Would you like, you know, an external hard drive? That's about it. I mean, after that, they stop. And then so from reading the internal documents, people in the blogosphere took this leap that the watch experience is going to be different. And for the first time, it's going to be like Apple in the seersucker suit and mismatched tie used car sales bit. And I was like, you know, maybe people are jumping the gate because you really can't say that until you see. But then once you start reading what people say are in the leaked employee documents, it is a little bit more pressure than before. But you have to remember where AA is coming from. She comes from Burbs, and that was what they do at Burbs. And then so if she wants to do that in her new position, that's kind of entirely up to her. And you can't get mad at them for trying if it doesn't work and they switch back. Then you realize that that doesn't work in our community. But it's nothing wrong with her to try if it's going to allow them to make more. Now, I took that and reconciled it with Ewan just said that Chuck said. And I'm like, yeah, now it does feel a little bit Uji and greedy because I would be kind of irritated when I go in and they try to upsell me. And like you said, you know, one of the things the appointments will guarantee do is give them the opportunity to sell you more than you really need. And my suggestion is with the return policy, if you can, just buy it at $350. If you like it, then go upgrade to what you want. Never mind the stupid appointment. If you don't like it, give it back. Still never mind the stupid appointment. I mean, there's no real decision. You buy it or you don't, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, the other thing as well is the returns policy on these things, whether they're still taking to the 14 days and that kind of stuff.
Normally new products is 30, so we should be good for that. But you're right. I think it should be probably like a phone. A phone is 30. Everything else is 14.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
I mean, does that bother you guys if you roll in and they start trying to upsell you? And is it only for the watch, or are they going to start doing this to everything else? Like, would that irritate your Apple Store experience?
My problem
is straight up the wall.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate that too. But the thing is with my problem is the band, because the only band that's got even a remote chance of fitting around my wrist is the one that starts at $1,000.
You mean from Apple?
From Apple, yeah. But until there's I'm not going to buy a watch until there's a replacement band market there that's shown to be decent. And even then, I'm not sure I will. So I wanted to wear me Pebble watch yesterday, and because I never wear it, I forgot to put it on, and I was like, bugger, you know. And it was because I did want it at one point. I'll go around it this weekend, so I'll wear it this weekend. But
there's a couple good Kickstarter ones about like big boy wrists and stuff like that. I saw one on Kickstarter, one on Indiegogo.
Yeah,
there's at least a couple because I was, I thought of both of you guys because I know, Doc, you've talked to me about watch bands before. And I think you and you mentioned at one point something about not knowing if the sport band would even make it all the way around your wrist. So I know I've seen at least a few things announced. I think one of them was Kickstarter, but I think the others were like just companies that were deciding to make bands that were a little bit longer. So
yeah, no, I think we'll see what happens with it.
Certainly an option there, yeah.
I'm going to hold back until I'm definitely not a pre-order on the 10th. No way. Becoming Steve Jobs is a book. I'm sorry that Adam's not here tonight actually to talk about it because Adam had a really good talk with Tom on DTNS this week about it.
Yeah.
This is an unauthorized biography and it's interesting that the Isaacson thing was authorized. This is unauthorized. Apple weren't going to do anything and get involved with it in the slightest. But then everyone's interviewed for it and given an opinion on it. And most of the people are saying that this is a far better book than anything that Isaacson wrote.
You know what's funny is while you guys were talking about Kelly's laptop, I remember hearing Adam's piece the other day. And I was saying to myself, I'm not going to go purchase the book until it's ready for Audible. So as I'm scrolling through Mac Rumors and I looked at it, I go, you know what, just let me check Amazon.com. And I went there and they actually have the Audible book available. And now in Amazon, this is a brand new integration for them. It says this is available for Audible. You have 4 Audible credits. Do you want it? And I just clicked the button. So it's currently downloading to my phone at the moment. And I can't wait to give it a look-see because the Isaacson book, you're right, I kind of didn't like it. I got about halfway through it, and I said, all right, screw it. But I'm really curious about this.
Brian Chavin wrote about this over at Mac Observer, and he had a couple of interesting points. And the first was Isaacson is a very good biographer. All of the detail, all of the fact-checking and all of those things, that is all like 100%, and it's super reliable. Steve Jobs pursued Isaacson to get this book written. This was like a Steve Jobs vanity project, for lack of a better term. And so he's very good at the biography piece of it. He's not a very good writer. So there was a lot of useful information. There was a lot of detail. All that stuff was legit, but it wasn't a very compelling story. It wasn't something that he put together very well. And so Brian's assessment is part of the reason that lots of people read that book and did not enjoy it is because Steve picked the wrong guy. He got a biography, right, but it's not necessarily the greatest presentation of it. You know, like it wasn't as interesting as it should have been. And a lot of people, you know, and when you look at that book, like, you know, it's the way it portrays Steve Jobs is not flattering. I'm not passing judgment on it, but it's not. There's no disputing that it does not make out that he is some sort of warm, fuzzy ray of sunshine in everybody's life. That's not the case. We all knew that. But the interesting thing to me about it is that a lot of people were interviewed for this other book who are weighing in on it. And it sort of, one of the interesting things that Brian pointed out was that a lot of those people are sort of trying to reconcile the version of Steve in the Isaacson book with the version of Steve that they knew. And, you know, there's a lot of times when you sort of, when you hear stories like that about people, like, to take a good example from today's headlines, there are probably people whom Jeremy Clarkson has been nothing but kind to, who are now getting all kinds of questions from everyone they know about, like, how could you work for that guy? How could you ever have anything to do with him? And being able to reconcile what the world now knows with what you know and having there be a huge disconnect there sometimes is hard for people. And so I think that there's a certain amount of that going on as well. People sort of trying to make sure that the warm, fuzzy ray of sunshine that Steve was in their lives is something that a lot of people are getting into. I think Brian had a couple of really good points, and one of them was that Isaacson's a great biographer, just not a great storyteller.
Yeah.
Right. That's very true.
And, you know, I'll buy this and I'll read it, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I think I'm just curious to see what the differences are. And, you know, luckily I have an Audible subscription, and, you know, every once in a while there's a commute that needs to happen or a plane ride that needs to happen. And so that's the best time to run through these books. And I'm just curious to see how they handled it. And, you know, especially because everyone says, like, you know, this is, quote, at this point in time, the end all be all. But I like Ken's point. The movie is still going to be made based off the Isaacson piece. So there's that. Mm-hmm.
The new MacBook Airs with the updated Broadwell chips have got the ability to display and drive 4K displays at 60 hertz. They're that powerful. The new addition of the chip means that the boosting graphics with the Intel HD Graphics 6000 will support up to a 4K output at 60 hertz using DisplayPort. Now, you can't get it out of HDMI because it still uses the old 1.4 limitation for it, the standard. But, I mean, that chip update has kind of really set the Airs apart now, and they are tipping against probably the lower end pros, surely.
Oh my God. Well, you know, it amazes me where we've gone with computer monitors and graphics technology at this point in time, because just happened to be going through some, throwing out some crap in the basement, and there's a guy who has an office right next to me who does a thing where he takes older computers, fixes them up, and donates it to those people who don't have a computer or can't afford one. And in the hallway, there was a come across the Radius rotating black and white monitor. And I remember I got mine, that was the most coveted experience. Like, I couldn't wait to get my hands on this monitor because it did 800 by 600.
Well, I remember there were a bunch of Radius monitors that were amazing, like they would rotate so that if you were a document layout person, it was document sized.
Yeah, the Siemens one did it.
Yeah. But can you imagine that? Like, I was creaming my shorts to get my hand on a monitor that did 800 by 600, and the one I just recently threw away could do that. I also, at some point in time, got a 1024 by 768 Sony 19D. And I remember because this monitor was damn near 100 pounds. And at the time when I bought that monitor, I swear it went for almost $4,000. And we were the Sony dealers, so I think I was getting a deal at that price. Mm-hmm. But a 19D sat on your desk here, and the back of the monitor would still reach off the back of the standard issue 29-inch desk depth.
Yeah.
It was the craziest monitor ever. And so to think that we're talking about pushing 4K monitors at 60 hertz, like, that's just in freaking insane.
I used to have a 21-inch monitor that was 2K. And it was awesome. It was the first really decent one I had for photo editing. And it used to be in this corner of the room where I sit now, because the desk I had, we had a really deep corner desk. And the monitor itself
the corner.
Would touch in the corner across the backs of the corners. And yep. I'd have enough room for a keyboard and about another 2 inches before I got to the radius. And I was hanging off the edge of the thing typing on it. It was massive. Unbelievable. Yep. And it was heavy as hell. I dropped it in the end.
I knew a number of people who were in IT at when everything was a CRT monitor. And I remember specifically having more than one conversation with somebody who said, we don't use Sony monitors. And I remember asking them what was wrong with Sony monitors. And basically all they said was they weigh twice as much as every other monitor and we can't move them around all the time. Yep. So it was just a logistics issue. They were like, half of us can't lift a Sony monitor, so we can't give them to people because if they move, it's a two-person operation.
Is this going to break out into the Monty Python Yorkshire Gutter sketches, Batwing? Yeah, fair point.
Luxury.
What was really, really funny, I remember they were called Sony. I'm looking on eBay right now. There was a Sony, there was a CPD 19 multi-scan, and the other thing that was real trippy, it was one of the first monitors with a swivel base. I remember selling them based off of the swivel base. But Sony, Siemens, and I believe it was LaCie actually had the shield that was this giant, like, you wrap it around and you click it to the side of the monitors to cool all the lighting, and it came with the colorimeter puck that you would stick to the screen and get to calibrate on. And, like, you know, when everyone used to see that monitor and they would walk into, at that time, I was doing a lot of advertisement for the newspaper, so I was doing a lot of full-page ad, and all you would ever see on that screen was Quark Express, and at that time, it was called E-Tools, and it wasn't even Internet Explorer. We were on Netflix back then. Not Netflix.
Netscape.
Netscape. There we go. Thanks, Kelly.
It was on Netscape and CyberDuck. I remember that little device from LaCie because that's when I worked there.
Yeah,
was doing support for them, and now of course I can't remember what it was called, but I remember having to do support for that and how people were super excited because they could order and get that giant hood. So if you want, here's a concrete example of how far things have come, just for, because I think this is a really fascinating bit of information. The icon, any icon, the little square on your iPhone screen, is higher resolution than the first Macintosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. If my mic wasn't on a stand, I'd drop it right now. Because seriously, like, think about that just for a second. And you have that in your pocket. And remember how big that old computer was? It was not small.
And you know, Ewan, hearing what you said about the monitors, I saw that piece earlier. And the other one that I saw recently that blew me away was this idea of getting to 10 terabyte solid state drives. Did you see that one?
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay, so here, I'll pop the link real quick. Intel says their 3D NAND technology will allow us to hit 10 terabytes on solid state drives. Now, God knows that must cost like a Mercedes and a half. But the fact that it's possible and the fact that it's coming and the fact that it doesn't take but about 2-3 years for this price to come.
Well, now
it'll cost almost as much as an Apple Watch.
No, I mean, hang on a second, because there's large terabyte drives are already being made. I stay at a place down at Heathrow Airport regularly, and there's a guy who I occasionally see kicking around, and he works for a firm that makes SSDs, and they make up to 9 terabytes at the moment. as an SSD.
Really? Yeah. I only know the 4 terabyte.
But I mean, you're talking about a large unit, and it's probably there's a bit of RAID going on in there as well, maybe. But they do mass data storage and recovery. They do all the data storage for aircraft parts and stuff like that, where you've got masses and masses of part units and tracking of data of lifespan and those kind of things for replacement and so on. But you can get up to higher levels like that. And I put them in contact. I put Marussia in contact. When I went to see Marussia, the F1 team, they can't use spinning drives in their laptops because the machine, the engine frequencies just mean that the needles jump all over the shop, so they have to use SSDs. And I put them in touch with this guy so that they could get large SSDs out on track.
Wow. You're a brave man to say large unit on the show with Bad Winters in the chat.
Yeah. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2, and that isn't even the half of it. You got all the offer codes, you got all the shiz that they normally do. They've got tons of stuff going on with dedicated servers, the main names, co-location services, VPS, VPN, VPS Cloud. It's just immense. They are a fantastic, fantastic bunch of people. But they are also heavily into the sponsorship of the British Tech Network now. We are joined at the hip, so to speak. And you'll have noticed that the live show today on my right-hand side, you've seen a little banner that says the live show today is sponsored by 100TB.com. Now, 100TB is part of the global companies that run along with UK2.net. But if you're a US listener, they'll be great for you. You can get dedicated servers from $139 a month, which are really, really fast. And we did this a little earlier on in the show, but let's just do it again, Doc. If you are sitting thinking, well, okay, you've got this new live service, it's just BS, and you know, you're just still using Livestream and saying it's someone else. We aren't using Livestream. And the reason you can tell is there is a 3-second delay on me speaking and Doc hearing it on the feed. And he's just going to slowly open his microphone up at the other end at the minute and get us... There you go. So that's how fast it is.
That's just mind-boggling.
That is amazing.
That has been going for an hour now, and it's still right where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, we've been broadcasting for an hour. We've been going for an hour and 35 minutes in the testing and the streaming part of it. We've only been recording for an hour, but you just heard there straight away, you know, that is a 3-second delay to Hawaii, and everyone in the world is getting it 3 seconds behind me saying it, and that is running on the same server that you would buy from 100TB.com. But it's that good. It's superb. We are long rid of live stream. This is the best thing since sliced bread and marmalade and toast. There you go.
Point out the load on your machine at this point, because that was the other thing that to me was really dramatic.
Yeah, I mean, we've been varying a little bit as we've gone along, but at the moment we're actually running at 72% on CPU, but we've been down at 56, 57 on CPU for most of the show. So there you go.
And what was it in the old days?
When I was running it on live stream, it would be 100%, 99%, 97%, 96%. So, you know, lip sync and stuff like that is going to get an awful lot better. Kelly's lip sync there was actually nearly perfect.
And you've not gone 8-bit, not one time.
No. Well, in terms of the clarity of the stream, it's you are watching 720p and that's it.
It's stupendous. I can't even. I can't even.
2,236 kilobits per second at 720p, so it is absolutely gorgeous.
Well, this is at least the third iteration of streaming setup I've been in on with you guys, because I've been around a while, and it's awesome. Hands down, this is the nicest it's ever looked, and the background is awesome, and everything looks great, and there's no oddity in what I'm seeing in the view. And like earlier when you said, and now let's talk about, and then you flipped to the watch and it was right there on the stream.
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to make, you know, Andy and Atco comes on and goes, oh, this is the podcast where I can't see myself any, isn't it? No, you can now pretty much. Andy.
Not anymore.
It is nearly 100%. So there you go. One of the other tools that we've got for doing that is Wirecast. So thanks to UK2 for providing the front end that you guys are watching. The back end here in the studio here and in the north for Paul is Wirecast, provided to us by Telestream. They've given us $2,000 worth of software free of charge and said, yep, go for it. fill your boots and make some great shows. And we couldn't do what we do without the interface now between Wirecast and UK2 and 100TB.com. So thank you to everyone involved in getting this done. And massive, massive thanks to Shads and Wheaters for getting it up and running in the last sort of 12 hours since we got the server handed over to us. It is, it's slick as snot. Got to come and watch live. If you're
so amazing. Yeah. Like, if you're somebody who's listening to this after the fact, you need to try. If you're listening after the fact because you've been frustrated in the past about the live stream not working or cutting out or looking funny or whatever it was, come back. Try it again, because I guarantee you it's a dramatically different experience. Nothing. It is for me, and I'm on the show.
Nothing like anymore. Now then, if you're if you like our new caricatures, which are fantastic, you go to the banners on the BTM homepage, BritishCentNetwork.com. You will see banners that rotate every time you log into that page. You'll get a brand new banner. They're presented to you at random. There are currently, I think, 32 banners that you can see. And there's going to be more of those soon. We've done a whole pile of caricatures, and we've got a great response from those. Thanks to everyone who's bothered to say something. But what we've got for you is your own chance to have a Len Peralta BTN caricature. And you're sitting thinking, well, that's okay. But, you know, there's loads of people that do caricatures. Well, this is Len Peralta, and it's $100, which is not much considering how much, you know, how well thought of Len is amongst the art community. But you don't just get that anyway. What you get is you get your own caricature. Batwinch was the first one to buy one. Here she is, and she's on this banner. But you get to pick your banner that you want on the BTN homepage. So you can send us an advertising banner. And it doesn't have to have your caricature on or anything like that. What did Batwench want? Batwench wanted her podcast dream team with her in it. So there you go. There's her podcast dream team and Batwench at the end. That's her. That's what she wanted for her money. So that's it.
And that helmet is fantastic.
It is. She gets that image as well in high res, so she can print it out at home and use it whenever she wants. And she's actually got it as a Twitter avatar. We'll send you a BTN Twitter avatar as well with the BTN logo in the background. We'll send you an all access areas pass, all areas access pass that you can show and flash around at the bash, and you get the banner of your choice to go in. It can be advertising for your company, it can be advertising for the local fate, it can be advertising for you personally, any services that you've got. We'll even make it for you. So there you go. $100 gets you your own Len Peralta caricature and an advertising banner on BTN. That's pretty good value considering how many people we get through the site.
Yeah, and you get the rights to that image. Like, this is, I don't know that people necessarily know that. You can make it your Facebook picture, you can make it your Twitter picture, you can use it for whatever for $100.
Yeah.
And it's Len Peralta. He does all the Geek a Week sketches, you know, and the is it Geek a Week cards?
He does the stuff he was on, doing TTNS every Friday. He draws you know, the image of the day from the stories that they're gonna cover. So
yeah. So for people trying to figure out why that name sounds familiar, now you know.
Batwinch is pointing out that the All Access All Areas Pass does not get you into Sellafield, which is a nuclear establishment in the northwest of England, which it doesn't. Let's just sort of put that out, of course. And Shad says he wants one. There you go, mate. All you got to do is send us an email to btncaricatures@gmail.com, and we'll tell you how. We'll give you all the details. And you need 3 pictures to send on to Len, so...
And now I've got the British Tech Network homepage in another tab, and I'm just reloading it to see what all the banners look like.
If you wanted it, you'd have to pay more as well. That is a BTN price, by the way. You paid Len direct, and that is a BTN price. I don't know what there's a code, BTN Len or something like that, I think it is. But we'll give you a code when you write in, and you get your caricature done. Yeah. And the bash is coming up. Yes, 4th of July. Yay. It's here. It's going to be awesome. Curry on the 3rd of July, bash on the 4th. You all know the format. You've all been before. I want more people here this year than ever. We've dropped the price from last year. We were £25 last year because we didn't have a sponsor. We haven't got a sponsor at the moment this year either, which we could do with. If anyone would like to sponsor us, that would be great. You'll get your products shown out around the world. It's only £20 though. Buy your £20 ticket. That gets you all your food. It gets the rental of the hall, and the hall costs us £400 for the day. And it gets you all the beer and stuff that you could possibly want to drink. If you want to come to the curry, it's a £10 deposit. That includes the kids. But then the beer bill is split between the adults. That's all you pay. And kids are free. Anyone under 16 is free to the bash. So there you go. Make sure you come along. We might even say 18-year-olds as well, because they're still at school, aren't they? Students. There you go. Bring your student ID card and we'll let you in, maybe. But you're not Batwinch. Don't think Batwinch is coming in free. That's not what's happening. He's already bought a ticket anyway. I've got the money. the Sunday ticket as well. Yeah, the Sunday ticket thing is still on. We've got a couple of spaces left, and that's the What I Know Day, and it's kind of like a little seminar room thing here. We're going to set up the front room with a TV in it, and it's going to have people saying, here's what I know about something, and doing a little presentation on it. If you want to go and watch it, that's fine. If you don't, if you want to sit on the patio and drink in the sun and eat burgers, that's fine too. It's your choice entirely. Dig out your student ID card. No, it may be a little out of date. Probably. Right, have we got a cool thing, Ms. G?
I do. For the Mac Show, I'm going to pick the new version of Fantastical. Fantastical, however you want to say it. It's from FlexiBits at flexibits.com, FlexiBits. And it's amazing. And the reason that it's amazing is because if you weren't using it already, there is an iOS version, and the iOS version, the great thing about Fantastical, even if in version 1.0, it was what it was previously, was a menu bar item that drops down, and it's got a little entry in the top. It shows you the month, and then it's got your events listed underneath it, and there's a little entry box at the top. So you hit control space or whatever you've chosen, and you type in, having lunch with Ewan next Tuesday at 1 p.m. And then it fills in lunch, Ewan, and if I say at the Curry House, you know, it'll put the Curry House name in there. It'll give me, and then it'll automatically give me the alarms. But all I have to do is type that sentence. You can do the same thing with the iOS version. And now what they've done with version 2 is turned it into two pieces. The first is the menu bar item, which is still amazing, but you also get the main calendar window like you would with any of the other calendar applications that are available on the Mac. And now it's amazing. It is super fantastic. It's so useful. I love it. It manages a truckload of calendars for me. I've used it on iOS forever. Those guys are great. And I can't, like I said, I can't say enough nice things about it, because Fantastical is a great program. And it's one of those things that's super useful. It only gets more useful if you're using it on iOS, because they're similar. And right now it's on sale. And this is where everybody's going to need to sit down. If you're not sitting down already, I hope you're not driving when you hear this. Don't have sticker shock. It's $39.99 US right now.
Now, what's your view on the pricing on that?
On sale.
Yeah, but what's your view on the price on that? Because I always looked at Fantastical and thought it was a little bit over the odds.
So right now it's $29.99 in the United Kingdom. That's the UK price. And because on their store, I can go ahead and flip between them. And it's going to go up $10 US once the introductory period is over. And if you're somebody who manages a lot of calendars or has to keep track of, appointments in other time zones, this is something that is unbelievably useful to you. I guarantee it.
Brilliant. Good pick. Okay. Doc, what do you have for us?
All right. Cool. I actually sent you the link earlier, but then I went further and threw the little back attack at this bad boy. This guy is known as Click, the first watch band adapters for Apple Watch. And what's cool is, these guys, about three different watch band guys came out on Kickstarter at the same time. Most of the guys are still stuck in the gate, haven't even hit 1,000. These guys doubled their backing goal. They still got 21 days to go. And I think for two reasons. Number one, they do offer an anodized metal version, and they offer a sort of a more of a plastic version that goes in first. But I mean, their adapter is only like $20, but it's going to allow you to use any watch band you already have or one that you purchased from any standard issue. You know,
so there's no straps coming with this. This is just the connection to the Apple Watch.
This is just the connection to the watch. Because all you need is a little adapter from there. You can take the band off of your old watch, right?
Yeah.
So I can go pull the watch band off of one of my favorite Oakleys, which happens to come in something that looks like steel gray. Hopefully the colors are similar. that I loved the way the watch band was because it had a nice big Oakley clasp that never comes apart no matter what you do to it. It takes work to get it off. And then so basically for $12 US or $20 US, you can, and they still have a lot, they put a lot on the pre-order. You can get a band that will work basically with your any Apple Watch you put. You can use any band you want. And so this is kind of cool. I'm trying to see where these guys are shipping it from. They're shipping it from Rochester, New York. But yeah, I think this is a really cool idea. And these guys are funded. The other guys are still spinning their wheels. Either they're not very good Kickstarters or they took the simple approach. Never mind making a band. Let me just give you an adapter. You can stick anything on you want.
There are a bunch of kids who don't shave yet.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is. I'm getting old. Jesus.
And it's brilliant. Like, this is where you take something that you know is going to take a large impact on people and, you know, just go create something cool instead of sitting around complaining, oh, this is not going to work for me because X, these guys figured out how to make it work for them. So I give them credit for that, and it's really cool. I love this graphic that shows the simplicity. Hopefully that link works. Yes, it does. And yeah, I mean, it's really cool. So I'm looking forward to this because then, I don't know, those little rubbery unobtainium bands that used to come on some of the watches, that rubber thing, I don't like that because it gives you wrist funk after a while. So I prefer a natural material like leather or, you know, a stainless steel, something that you can clean very easily and it won't have that disgusting skin salt look to it. So this is cool. Now you can do whatever you
want. You're not fooling anyone, Doc. You mean sake buildup, and we all know it.
This is probably true as well. We won't get there. One of the things that's really cool, I don't know why you need this mini, except for you could leave it on the band. They have a five-pack, which only sets you back $65. But I guess that way, once you connect it to the bands you like, you can just leave it connected to the bands. Either way, these guys are selling out like hotcakes.
Okay, so you're not doing it. You're not undoing and doing it permanently.
Yeah, remember when you try to set the pins on a watch band and a little pin goes flying and you spit? Yep. You never find that thing. Once you lose one of those, you're done. Just go to the, you know, look about 3 seconds. If you can't find it on the floor, you got to go to the jewelry store and be like, oh, can I get a watch band pin? Because I've done that countless times.
There's quite a lot of those places actually now do replacements for those kind of things, which is good.
Anyway, I think it's pretty wicked.
Cool. Yeah, good pick.
And I'll double back Kelly's pick because I love Fantastic Car. I've been using it for years. Sean and the guys over at Flexi Bix are really awesome. Great guys I met at Macworld. I will tell you, you and you also correct, when I first looked at the new update, I kind of double blinked on the place for a minute, but then I'm like, that's an app that I really, really use every day, so it may be worth it.
Yeah, no, definitely. My cool thing is iSkySoft Media Converter. It does everything up to 4K into any video format you possibly want, into multiple codecs as well as, and the only thing I'll say that's a bit critical of it is that you can get some really good compression out of things like the handbrake. So if you're taking a MOV file and compressing it down into a H.264, you get really, really great compression on that. You don't get very good compression on the WMV compression on this system. But that's my only criticism of it. It's, other than that, it's superb. It really, really is superb. $30, so it's not super cheap, but it's better than anything that you've got in the Apple Store at the moment. And there's an awful lot of the ones that are in the Apple Store are not Yosemite compatible now. So I had free video converter, which was awesome for doing WMVs. Loved it forever, and it was free, so I can't complain too much. But as soon as Yosemite came along, no longer works. And all the other ones that are in there that are kind of like almost semi-clones of it, all of them stop working as well. So this one works with Yosemite, and it works really, really well. iSkySoft Media
Player. What's the deal about going up to deluxe versus regular? Anything important?
I don't know. I just bought the top-end one. So for $30, I couldn't give it stuff.
Oh, no, the top-end one was $60. That's why I asked.
Maybe I didn't buy the top-end one then. I don't know. I've got no clue.
Nice.
I thought, the one that they offered me, I just said, yep, fine, $30, buy it, and it works perfectly for everything I've got. The only thing I really miss with handbrake, because handbrake, you used to be able to set the file size, So you could say, here's the big MUV I've got. I want it down, and I only want it to be 498 megabytes. So you knew it was under 500 gig for upload or something to WordPress. And now it doesn't do that anymore. You have to sit and mess around with the RF settings to kind of figure out, well, how long does it last? And so, like Big Show last night, I've potentially got a fairly big file there because there was 70 gig of video recorded last night in six chunks. So I've got to put that all together, and that's probably going to spit out a file at sort of 60 gig from Wirecast, from Final Cut, and then I've got to sit and think about, well, what do I need the RF setting be to get that down? It's probably going to be near 30 and keep the quality up. And whereas before you just said, look, give me the highest quality, but make sure the file's 499 megabytes, and it would do it. So I wish that would come back. If anyone knows how to do that, then you're, I'll buy you beer, most definitely. Pocket Show, I don't think he's on Monday night, but I'll put the banner up anyway. So if you can get to the Pocket Show then, and it is on, then please do go and support Paul and everyone on that show, because it really is it's one of the best shows on the network. It really is worth going to see. Most definitely. Where can we get a hold of you, Kelly G?
You can find me explaining stuff to people over at MacObserver.com. Occasionally I appear on the Daily Observation podcast there, and you can find me elsewhere on this network. You can also find me on Twitter as Verso.
Brilliant, actually. Thank you very much. And Doc, where are you?
At Doc Rock, all over the internet, webs, at the MacUser.pro, and on BTN on Thursdays and Fridays with a band of miscreants from across the pond.
Yeah, and we're going to start a new show soon called Crossing the Streams, aren't we? So we'll the stream show.
Yeah.
Don't know what that's about, but we'll get there. And I seem to remember I agreed to do a show at 3 a.m. with Gary Altman last night. Which
yeah, you did. Once a month.
I think so.
Funny.
I shouldn't drink. I really shouldn't drink.
Gary would be hilarious at 3 a.m.
This has been the Mac Show. You can get me, Ewan Rankin, at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. There is no Mac Show next week because it's Good Friday and I'm working my arse off because it's a holiday. It means I get loads of work, which is great. And no one else is available to take over. The big show will be taking place. It'll be Righty Boy and it'll be Thursday night as normal, but it'll be on Google Plus, not on this system. Unless he can figure out how to stream to it, that might be an interesting one. We'll manage. See you all next week. No, the week after. And I just want to say, we've been streaming solidly for an hour and 55 minutes, totally in sync, and none of it has gone out of sync at all throughout the whole thing. This system rocks. Thank you, UK2, and thanks to the Pauls, Shadwell and Wheatbeater for sorting this out. See you all next week, or the week after. Thanks for listening.
Aloha.
And it's just blipped at 80% and then gone back down.
Oh my goodness.
Gotta love it.